Do you have an experience in your life that you'd not want to repeat, but which you'd never trade away? For some of our veterans, it might be boot camp or basic training or another moment in your service to our country. A time when you were pushed to your very limit, but learned the courage and camaraderie that you've always sought and what they really were. For some of our doctors, it might be your residency, a season when you were immersively put into a hospital or a clinic, and you learned what it meant to become a true healer. Mine might not be quite so dramatic, but it was my first year in law school. I had been a good student, and I'd worked in a law office during my summers in high school and in college. And I felt like I was up for the challenge. I committed myself to nothing else as the semester started, and I'd studied hard, or so I thought. After taking my fall exams in December, I didn't necessarily think I'd ace them all, but I did figure that I did okay. Well, I didn't do okay. In fact, I did very poorly. I did terribly, which was quite a shock. So when we returned for the spring semester, I consulted my very smart and very savvy friend, Vance, concerning how he went about studying. And he was kind enough not only to explain to me about his typical study schedule for the week, but he showed to me his lecture notes, and he lent me his course outlines for the first semester. And after reviewing all this, I quickly saw that what he'd been doing last fall and what I'd been doing last fall were two very different things. That is to say, I began to recognize the enormous gap, really a grand canyon, between his approach to law school and mine. And while I saw the path ahead now for the spring, I saw also that this was going to be a titanic challenge. There was contracts, constitutional law, evidence, torts, civil procedure, property, oil and gas. It would be a tall order to absorb this entire curriculum and then exhibit mastery over it in just a few months. To tell you the truth, as I began that spring semester, it all seemed incredibly daunting, if not altogether impossible. Well, we've been studying the Sermon on the Mount now for about what amounts to a semester, and I feel the same way about it. Maybe you do too. But instead of the titanic challenge of the law and learning the law, what we're being asked to learn now, what we're being asked to absorb, is something even more challenging and ultimately more important: the core curriculum and the essential features of the Christian life. Things like mercy, like purity, like righteousness, peacemaking, and self-control. We're asked to learn how to be salt and light, to go the extra mile, to turn the other cheek, to love our enemies, to pray for those who persecute us, to forgive those who sin against us. And now, here at the end of the sermon, as you've heard in our text this morning, we're being instructed that we must not judge one another. That is, that moral searchlight, that moral spotlight we use to find the speck in our brother's or our sister's eye, must instead first be turned on ourselves. We're being told that before we label others as the bad guys and lift up ourselves as the virtuous, as the enlightened, as the elect, we need to first ask, what if I'm the bad guy here? What if I'm the one that needs to change? What if I'm the one who's wrong? What if in the same or maybe a slightly different way, I'm really no better? Maybe, in fact, I'm worse. That's the sort of examination that this text calls for us to make. And then, as you heard at the very end of the text today, Jesus added one more lesson to the curriculum. And it's such an important one, they call it golden. do unto others as you would have them do unto you. The Sermon on the Mount is tough stuff. It's demanding. It is a demanding curriculum, a heavy class load, which whenever we're really tested on it, it tends to show us the enormous gap, that grand canyon between who God asks us to be and who we really are, which all begs an obvious question. Does God really expect us to do all this? And if so, how? Well, what I'd like to suggest for us is that just as it was in the spring semester of my first year of law school, I needed a new approach to the curriculum. If we're to truly be a Sermon on the Mount people, we need a new approach too. Which brings us to this little section embedded in the middle of what Matt read to us just a moment ago, Matthew chapter 7, and we're going to focus on verses 7 and 8, which I'm going to read again, but from an expanded Greek translation, because it adds a few extra little words for us this morning that I think are really key, are really important. So listen again. It's Matthew 7, verses 7 and 8. And it goes like this. Keep on asking, and it will be given to you. Keep on seeking, and you will find. Keep on knocking, and the door will be opened to you. Did you hear that? Keeping on, that amplifies, that magnifies each verb, telling us that if we're to master this class, this asking to hear God's voice, this seeking after God's guidance, this knocking on God's door of pulling on God's sleeve isn't something we should do periodically. It's not something we should do often, but rather it should look like almost an ongoing and lively conversation between two people. Maybe you've had to cancel a vacation here during the pandemic. I'd planned to go to New York in April with Kelly to see a Broadway show called American Buffalo. It's a play by David Mamet, and it was to star actors Lawrence Fishburne and Sam Rockwell in the two lead roles. Rockwell won an Academy Award in 2018, and he's the favorite actor of my son, Hank, who's in college in Los Angeles and who's very interested in the theater. Well, about a year ago, about September of 2019, I was in Atlanta for a memorial service, and I went out to eat to a nice restaurant afterwards that evening, and it was crowded, and I was alone, but they were able to nestle me in to the bar for dinner. And as my food arrived, the couple next to me left, and the hostess sat two gentlemen next to me, right beside me. And the man right beside me now looked a little bit familiar, maybe from a TV show or from a movie. But then I looked over at the guy on his other side, and I realized, hey, that's Sam Rockwell. And as I began to try to think of a clever, ice-breaking line or an interesting or compelling question to angle for an autograph for Hank, Rockwell leaned over and asked me what I'd ordered. And we all just started talking, the three of us. He was in town working on a movie with Clint Eastwood, and his friend, an actor named Yul Vasquez, was working on an HBO movie there in Atlanta, too. And I told him I was a minister from Houston and why I was in town. And as the conversation went on, I asked them if they'd ever worked together, how they became good friends. And Sam said, well, yeah, we worked together on a play in New York together. It was called The Last Days of Judas Iscariot, which was very weird and coincidental because I had just read that play just a few months before. And I'd been so moved by it that I wrote an essay, and it was put in our church magazine, The Fount, just a few months before this. So I told this to them, and I told them what I'd written about the play. And now that it came up, I recalled that Sam had played the lead in it. He had played Judas Iscariot. So I asked him, what was it like to play Judas? Which then led to a deeper dialogue about the themes of grace in the play, the nature of Jesus and God, and about the role of faith in their careers and in mine. And as we talked for about the next 45 minutes or so there at the bar, it was so interesting and so engrossing that when it came to an end, I almost forgot to ask for Hank's autograph before they left. You know, a conversation can be a strange, a wonderful, and a magical thing. But it can be hard to get a good one started with a human being, much less a God that we can neither see with our eyes nor hear physically with our ears. You know, Dolores Rader is our church family minister, and you likely know this already, but the purpose statement of our family ministry under Dolores' leadership reads like this: celebrating and navigating Mondays through Sundays toward an authentic and lasting faith in Christ. Did you hear that? Mondays through Sundays. What Dolores and her team are trying to do in our family ministry for our parents and for our kids from as early as they can understand it is to change, really obliterate the default setting that our society gives to us, that our faith in this Sermon on the Mount curriculum is mainly reserved for Sundays and for church and for special occasions and for crises times in our lives. Hannah Lancaster is a member of the family ministry team and is in charge of the tribe, our 5th to 7th graders. And Hannah recently told me about a book called Every Moment Holy by Doug McElvey. It's a series of litanies and blessings, laments, and petitions to God. You could call them everyday knocks on God's door, conversation starters, ways of breaking down the way that we tend to compartmentalize the mundane from the sacred and the sacred from the mundane. Well, the table of contents of the book look something like this: a litany before the ritual of morning coffee, a prayer for those who feel awkward at a social gathering, a blessing over the laundry, a liturgy for setting up a Christmas tree, a petition for the provision for the loss of electricity after a storm, a blessing over a moment of homesickness, a prayer before consuming social media, an offer of gratitude on the occasion of observing a tree swaying in the breeze, a litany for being moved by a song, a petition upon hearing the sound of sirens, a blessing for those waiting in line. Do you hear what he's doing? Do you see what he's trying to accomplish? Reaching out to God constantly, every day, and through every day. When this last demanding section of the Sermon on the Mount, where these seeking and knocking words appear, it's as if God is making a tacit admission that these are hard tasks. These are hard asks. It's as if Christ sees those gathered around him on the mount, on the plain, before him, shaking their heads and thinking, yes, but how? And so he tells them, you have to be in conversation with God about your life and the development of your soul all the time, always. So if this season, if this semester, you're feeling that enormous gap, that Grand Canyon between these Sermon on the Mount messages and who you are, try perhaps angling in with one of these conversation starters, these everyday litanies, petitions, laments, and blessings concerning these very subjects of Christ's sermon. Let me read to you a few titles of some of my recent knocks on God's door. A litany for turning my judgmental moral searchlight back on myself where it belongs. A liturgy for showing good faith to my opponent and her argument. A litany for releasing contempt for when I'm just about to click unfollow. A liturgy for knocking on God's door when I'm all out of salt and light. A lament over a failed attempt at turning the other cheek. A petition for the will to forgive when it's not even on my radar. A litany to study over the possibility that maybe I'm the bad guy. A lament over how God's asked me to treat others as I would want to be treated, but I decided I knew a better way. And finally, a petition to God to be shown what I might be missing in the Sermon on the Mount. Keep asking. Keep asking and it will be given to you. Keep seeking and you will find. Keep knocking on the door and it will be opened unto you. It's not impossible. God is there.